to see that evening sun go down. Hate to see that evening sun go down. Cause my baby, he done left his town. If I'm feeling tomorrow like I feel today,
that's the St. Louis Blues by W.C. Handy, a recording by Geraldine Steele and members of the Vocal Essence Ensemble Singers. William Christopher Handy is referred to as the father of the blues, and his legacy is celebrated every year in his hometown of Florence, Alabama. It's a 10-day celebration that features, among other things, performances by some of today's great blues musicians. This year's W.C. Handy Music Festival ended this past Sunday, and during the week I had a chance to talk with W.C. Handy's grandson, Dr. Carlos Handy, who last November became the president and CEO of Handy Brothers Music Company. Carlos Handy shares some thoughts on his grandfather's development of blues music and talks also about some of the challenges he faced from family and society at that time. He also talks about the significance of W.C. Handy's visit to Cuba in 1900 and how that visit affected him and his music. Carlos Handy is a physicist by education and profession. He has degrees from Columbia University and currently teaches at Texas Southern University in Houston.
His fame came relatively late. You know, so to speak, in some sense, he was already in his 40s, and you can ask what's the typical lifespan in those days. So I was intrigued. I mean, I'll say something, and maybe people might criticize, but I was surprised that it took him so long to really get into the blues in a wholehearted manner in terms of trying compositions and developing and stuff. And so I was just curious as to the psychological forces that may have stymied him in the beginning. And I believe that that his trip to Cuba must have had an impact, because there already the Cuban musical scene was already integrating Afro-Cuban sounds and rhythms and stuff into their formal compositions. And I, because when you read his book, you realize that that there's an element of insecurity on his part. He liked the blues. He kind of recognized that it was important, but he was also a classical musician, and he was subjective to the cynicism, if you will, from his professional environment and also from the social mores of the time. And I think he needed an ego booster, and I think that ego booster came when he went to Cuba and he saw the importance of Afro-Cuban music in the evolution of formal music, Cuban music, you know, Spanish music, you want to call it that. And I believe, even though he doesn't pinpoint in his book, I believe that was a subconscious motivator that led him, because, you know, everybody knows that when he came back from Cuba, basically he had a choice of either going up north and becoming the band director of a white band, or taking a lower-paying job in Clarksville, Mississippi. And in his book, he just says, he makes it appear as though it was just, you know, the whims of circumstances that led him to that. But I believe it's a little bit more. I believe that he wanted to incorporate African-American music into the fabric of traditional Western music and make that contribution. And I think he saw that from a different perspective when he went to Cuba. So that's the kind of multicultural, at least for now, perspective that I want to bring. And so I'm developing a small level musical event in Houston called Handy in Havana. Mm-hmm. And I hope to maybe at some point transition into more of a of a book along those lines. But I'm fascinated because it brings in a lot of historical facts that I think shaped my grandfather's perspective as a young man. And there are more elements in the book that I think lend themselves to basically how he matured in terms of his character and perspective and stuff like that. So I think that critical period, 1898 to about 1903, is the time period I'm really fascinated with.
He was susceptible to the condescending attitude people had towards the blues, you know, both whites and educated blacks. They thought it was just, just meaningless music. And so I think that had an influence in terms of him aggressively pursuing it, although his instincts were leading him in that direction.
It would be sort of discouraging, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and again, the thing, you know, that he was fundamentally a classical musician, so he was sensitive to the attitudes, if you will, of that community, and I guess in some sense, even though I don't know if his father's condemnations against the devil's music and so forth, I'm not sure if that was a factor in terms of maybe also dissuading him from really getting immersed in the blues, coupled with the prevailing attitudes of his society in those days towards the blues. He needed to pump himself up and get his mojo in gear. And so everybody talks about the 1903 experience because that's the one he's plainly acknowledges in his book, that he, for the first time, consciously bonded and really studied how this guitarist was playing his music, and that made an impact. But the thing that's interesting is, in 1900, with him, Harry went to Cuba, Havana. I guess that they were invited by the U.S. military that had just defeated Spain and they were occupying Cuba. So he in his book, he acknowledges going through the streets of Havana, listening to all the strange music in the most remotest corners of the streets. He acknowledges hearing the original forms of what later became the rumba. And I know in terms of Cuban music that that Afro-Cuban, the El Danzón was already a very popular type of composition, Contradanzas, Danzón. The song was emerging at that time. But certainly the Danzón was already published, and it clearly was of Afro. The irony is my mother was from Matanzas, Cuba, which is the birthplace of Afro-Cuban music. So a danzón, Las Alturas de Simpson, was one of the very popular pieces in those days, and that was composed prior to him going to Cuba, and he must have been exposed to that. So he must have directly seen the importance of Afro-Cuban rhythms and sounds and contributions as incorporated in essentially European music in terms of the formal Spanish composers, Cuban composers that were composing. And he must have seen that. And so I believe in my heart that he saw the importance of integrating this Afro-Cuban music into this Western style music, and he must have said to himself, I need to do the same for African American music. So I believe, even though he doesn't directly acknowledge in his book, I believe that was a factor. So when he comes back and he has a choice whether to go to Clarksdale, Mississippi, where he can surround himself with the blues, and he even acknowledged that it was his good fortune to be in the state of Mississippi because of all the states, that's the one that where the blues was very fertile and rich. And so I got to believe that part of that decision to go to Mississippi was a commitment on his part to try to do something with Afro-American music in terms of, integrating into the fabric of American Western music. So I believe sincerely.
everything that made an impact on him, he would write it down. So whether it's melodic phrasings that he may have heard, whether it's lyrical phrases, obviously some of the most famous are, you know, "He Has a Heart Like a Rock Cast in the Sea," or "Hate to See the Sun Go Down," you know, phrases like that. So he would collect all these things and write down, I guess, his observations. And so in his book, he acknowledges that habit of writing things down really came from his father. But then later on in the book, he makes reference to a very nice statement. So he's remarking on the fact that Memphis is the home of the blues. And then he says that some people think that New Orleans should have that distinction. But then he says, unfortunately, the New Orleans musicians failed to write it down before my time. So he attached a lot of importance to the writing, to putting on paper ideas and expressions and melodies. And that was, in some sense, the essence of who he was.
That's Dr. Carlos Handy, hearing him talking about his grandfather, W.C. Handy. And he refers to a book in the conversation. The book he's talking about is W.C. Handy's autobiography, Father of the Blues. I wondered, as president and CEO of Handy Brothers Music Company, if he himself had a musical background, if he had studied music at some point. And in fact, he has.
Well, I'm an amateur trumpet player. I mean, I'll share with you, I grew up in New York City. So in New York City, they give you an aptitude, whether you go into chorus, dancing, or instrumentation.
Yes.
And so I did that, and they put me in dancing. Okay. And so this was like the seventh grade. So I didn't want to be in dancing, because in those days it was just square dancing. And I feel like, so I did some name dropping, and so they put me in instrumentation. I did very well. You know, I became first chair borough-wide Manhattan Orchestra in the ninth grade and so forth. So, but even though my real passion was more science, I have a good appreciation for music. But the irony is, it wasn't until many years later that I realized how much I loved to dance. So my aptitude is that at an amateur level, and when I practice, I'm pretty good, but I'm not a, this is more of a personal thing, and I don't know how it reflects on my family, but I know that my father's generation, his sister, brother, they were all in his father's orchestra, or they performed with their father. But in my generation, going into the music, profession, for whatever reason, wasn't all that encouraged. I don't know why. I don't know if it's a pretty vicious lifestyle. It can be very hard. And I think that my father, seeing that I was interested in the science and so forth, didn't want to interfere. But, I wish I had spent a little bit more time pursuing music, even as a, semi-professional, if that's the right phrase. But, I am what I am and grateful for it. But certainly my generation wasn't really encouraged to pursue music that wholeheartedly.
Yeah. You were about eight when your grandfather
passed away.
Yeah, when he passed away. Right. Until that time, was there a lot of family gathering? You know, a lot of getting together with family, including your grandfather.
The real gatherings were, for the most part, whenever my grandfather would throw a lavish party, and which was maybe once or twice a year. So that was the essence of that. We were, at least in my formative period with my father's side of the family, I wasn't as close as I should have been. They were in a different part of, they were in the suburbs of New York, and we commuted by train, so, or subway, so we weren't as close as we could have been, and so we didn't really benefit. And also my father married twice, so he had
four children who were essentially a generation older than me. And so they were already off and running and doing their thing, and I was still a kid, so it wasn't, there was no real opportunity to interact with them at that level. It was only as we got older and we realized the frailty of life that we got closer. But in the earlier years, we sort of went in different directions.
Yeah, and I think that's a fairly common thing. And as you say, as you get older, you start valuing that connection with family, and you think back, my gosh, all the people were there that I could have, talked to. And
right. So, for instance, my father was a musician. I never really, he had me when he was 46. And my impressions of him was that he was not a musician, but turns out he was a musician. And there are these old photographs of the Memphis Orchestra in 1919. And in the back, in the xylophone section, I believe, percussion, is a 15-year-old, and that's my father. And I was rather surprised when I saw that photograph, and they identified him as such. And then when I asked my half-brother, William, who's already passed away in 2014, he was William C. Handy III. He said, "Oh yeah, Dad would, beat the drums when they were living up in Mount Vernon and all that." So, but that's something I never saw my father do. So, now I will say that, the New York public school system in those days, being an inner city educational network, nevertheless, I think had a very good music education program, and I benefited from that. And so I still got my dosage of music, if you will, but I wish it had been at a much higher level. I would really, something you don't see or you don't appreciate growing up is that you can be a doctor, medical doctor, or a professional in some other area and still a musician,
That's right.
A very good musician. And that concept never really entered my mind when I was growing up. Otherwise, I would have pursued it a little bit more aggressively.
Often in community orchestras and semi-professional orchestras, you find that very situation where doctors.
Well, I play in Houston. I live in Houston now, so I play with two groups. I play with the Kalawah Concert Band in the Woodlands, and those, for the most part, are school music directors and so forth. It's an extremely good concert band. And then I have the, by God's grace, the luck of playing with the Texas Medical Center Orchestra. And those are basically, for the most part, medical professionals. They're very, very talented. And in fact, the orchestra was awarded this year, I think it was the top community orchestra in the United States. So I'm extremely happy to be part of that.
Yeah.
So I see this group of very talented, almost professional musician, quality type musicians, but yet they're professionals in a different discipline.
Isn't that a situation of having your cake and eating it too?
Yeah, tell me about it. And that's the other thing that's really amazing. I mean, I guess all over the world, music is such a driving force, but here in the United States, it's just amazing to me how many talented, amateur type musicians, right, there are. And then you use that to measure how great a successful musician must be. It's just mind-boggling.
Yeah.
I told somebody, when you go into all the intricacies of music theory and stuff, I said, if I have to choose between being a professional musician and getting it right every single night and understanding all the intricacies of the theory and the, all the musical structure and form and all that stuff, and being a theoretical physicist, I'll take being a theoretical physicist any day.
That was Dr. Carlos Handy, the grandson of the father of the blues, W.C. Handy. He was in attendance at the W.C. Handy Music Festival held in Handy's hometown of Florence, Alabama, last week. The festival ended just this past Sunday.